Scarves Around the Funnel, brought to you by Forrest Hepburn and McDonald Signs.
Getting noticed isn't always easy, because there's so much noise.
But at Forrest Hepburn and McDonald, we make it easy. With standout signs, business cards, shop fronts, banners, leaflets, vehicle graphics, the lot. Showcasing your products, advertising your brand, and getting business noticed. So, what can we do for you? Forrest Hepburn and McDonald. Creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. Visit fhmcdsigns.co.uk.
By Hibbs, only as far as Oda, left foot shot, goal! It's Yutaro Oda! With a left foot drilled effort into the bottom right corner!
Hello and welcome to Scarves Around the Funnel, the podcast dedicated to Heart of Midlothian Football Club, who are fresh off their visit to Capello Park. A stadium that, according to my friend John, makes you feel like you're alive in the 1970s. An era known for the Watergate scandal, the emergence of disco, the rise of the space hopper, the winter of discontent, and good old-fashioned terracing at the football. First of all, I am joined by a man who was actually alive in the 1970s, Mark Donaldson.
I was indeed. And I was born 8 days after Hearts appeared in the Scottish Cup semi-final against Rangers on Wednesday the 30th of March 1977. The reason I mention that was the first season that Hearts reached both Scottish Cup and League Cup semi-finals. And we've only since then done it on four occasions, including this season.
That is very impressive improv, because you did not know what I was going to say in my intro. So
commentators do, son.
I doff my cap. That was seamless. You would think that we had planned it.
We actually hadn't.
Of course,
if we planned it, it would sound a lot worse.
Yeah, probably. We're also joined by someone who wasn't alive in the '70s, but I reckon he's partial to a pair of flares and a bit of Saturday Night Fever. Scott McIntosh.
Yeah, I was just about to say, if you want proof that we don't sort of, you know, set anything up prior to this, then just come to me and I'll make sure that there's no seamless sort of switch over to the next segment. I was going to say,
it's the word you're looking for, Scotty. It's fine.
Yes,
we'll edit that out. And Laurie will make it sound seamless.
Oh, it's been rehearsed. I know. I was going to say it's great knowing that the club, you know, the club bus could pretty much find Hamden now in its sleep. We just seem to go there now on a regular basis. The next step's just, you know, getting past that final furlough.
Indeed. I'm just trying to imagine if you've got some sort of John Travolta-esque moves now.
No, I was more of a sort of shoegazer. So I kind of had that kind of
shoegazer.
Yeah, you know, the early 90s stuff, Stone Roses and Ride and all that, Happy Mondays, shoegazer, you know, just head down, sort of bopping away. Bit of a shoegazer.
Fair enough.
Have you heard of that, Laurie? Have you heard of that?
Yes, I've heard of the term. It wouldn't be one that I would use myself, but I've heard of the term.
Occupation? Shoegazer. Okay.
It's a good point you make, though, Scott. I think I mentioned to you guys earlier there was almost a 12-year period after 2006. Well, there was certainly a 12-season period where we went to Hampden four times. And then in the last 6 years, there'll be nine visits to Hampden at least, obviously, potentially more. One to Murrayfield as well, if you want to throw that in there.
See, that 12-year period, though, to be fair, was there three semi-finals played away from Hampden because they were all League Cups?
Yeah, Hearts Inverness was at Easter Road and we shit the bed there.
But we played St Mirren at Firth Park as
yes,
well.
Yes, that was
we?
A yep. horrible night. Yeah. That game. Yeah, the pitch was probably worse than Greenock Morton's pitch, actually,
true,
in that game.
True.
I think there was only two, though. There was the Firth Park one and there was
two against Inverness at Easter Road.
There was two against Inverness, yeah.
We won two against Inverness. One. So there was three total, but there's also one that we had at Murrayfield in the 6 years. So
Very true.
The same. You know what that coincided with,
don't you? Episode 1.
Getting injured. And the start of this.
And episode one.
The downfall of Heart of Midlothian began.
Yeah, what was
Danny Amankwa running on that park 20 minutes in?
Anyway, I'm Laurie Dunsire, delighted to be joined by Mark and Scott as ever for this week's episode of Scarves Around the Funnel. As you can probably guess, we are going to talk about Greenock Morton against Heart of Midlothian in the Scottish Cup quarter final. We will talk about the draw for the Scottish Cup semi final. We will also look ahead to Hart's upcoming match away to Ross County as well. Before that, we'll do some housekeeping. I'll go into the bag of mail that we get and see what we've got here.
sounds like Glenn Michaels' cavalcade.
I wish it was the times where we could still get that. I know it wouldn't be very practical, and it would be. But, you know, if I just had like a bag of mail, I could just dip my hand into and find a letter from someone. So here we go. We've got one from Davey. He says, "Hi, guys. Just listened to your podcast reviewing the Hibs and Celtic games. Brilliant as usual." Davey put that in. I did not edit this letter. Obviously, it wouldn't be possible for me to do that. Royal Mail. Just wanted to mention something regarding the penalty we got against Celtic that no one seems to have mentioned. If you look closely at the incident, as I have, I am convinced that the ball actually hits Johnston on the arm before it hits Iwata. Because the refs can't speak to give an explanation, I wonder if that contact was actually the one that the penalty was given for. Would be interested in you and the team's thoughts on this. Regards, Davey, in brackets, DW Jambo. So, it's a theory from Davey. I would say that these days you never can tell with Scottish refereeing. Having watched it, obviously, at the time a few times, and having watched it again now, I still think it's a handball for the touch from Iwata. It does hit off the arm of Alistair Johnston, to be fair. Won't dispute that, but I think it's quite high up where it hits Johnston and comes back off Iwata. I think it's a harsh penalty still. I think it's a bit soft, but my feeling is that it's not against Johnston, but you never know.
You know what? I'm watching it back. I actually think Davey might be onto something here, because I don't know if anybody's even thinking about Alistair Johnston, because everyone's talking about, and Brendan Rodgers, it's never a handball against Tomo, which is his player. But when he goes up for it, the first contact is off Alistair Johnston's elbow.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is.
So, and it's still not, wow. Yeah, it might be. There's no way of knowing because it's so close in proximity and duration that you don't know. Yeah, I'm watching it over and over again. Clearly the first touch is off Alistair Johnston, which would make it more of a less of a penalty than it actually was. But it's still a nonsense, and I'll take it. But Davey, eyes, okay. Wow.
Okay, so you're convincing maybe. Mark of it. What about maybe. You, Scott? What do you think? Are you sold by Davey's theory?
I mean, there is strength in it. To me, it's a bit similar to the fight. You know, the semi final penalty we got back in 2012 where it hits. I think it's Joe Ledley and Wanyama's hand, and it's just like, well, I don't care who it's getting given for. I'm just very thankful that we've been given an extremely, extremely lucky decision. I've watched it a little bit earlier today. I can see where Davey's coming from. I still think it's given for the Iwata hand rather than Johnston's, but I can certainly see where he's coming from.
Okay. Yeah, and the 2012 one wasn't a penalty either, but as much as Celtic mourned about that one, we always have to remind them that you're forgetting that moments before that, Celtic shouldn't have equalised because
Hugo
was offside for their goal, and they conveniently forget that Celtic's penalty in this match was also a nonsense. In fact, it was much more of a nonsense than the one that Hearts
got. Don't you think, just briefly going back to that, it's been
very
easy.
You want to talk about Brendan Rodgers again?
No, definitely not.
Week 3.
I don't reference Brendan Rodgers this week. I'll give him a week off. No, what I would say is, I think because Celtic missed that penalty, it became all too easy for them to say that it wasn't a penalty. I think if Celtic had scored that, there would have been more of a defence of that incident. And I think it just helped that narrative of them to say that that also was very soft. Just something that we didn't get around to discussing last week.
Yeah. Whataboutery. There's a lot of yes. it at times, isn't there? No, that's probably a fair point, Scott. Before we crack on with the Hearts matches, I think it was worth mentioning that today at the time of recording, which is on Tuesday, the 12th of March, the Scotland squad has just been announced. And Hearts and Midlothian have three players included, two of them being goalkeepers. So congratulations to Xander Clark, to Lawrence Shanklin, but in particular to Mr. Craig Gordon, who is back in the team. We'll talk about the game shortly, keeping a clean sheet, but also back in the international fold. Great to see, wasn't it, Mark?
He's buzzing. He's gunning for gun. Not Henry Kelly's going for goal, but gunning for gun. Stevie Clark was asked about having a goal. Now, bear in mind, Robbie McCrory has been in the squad before, not as a first choice, but when he wasn't playing for Rangers. And as Stevie Clark said, look, the games he's had, no disrespect to the opposition, haven't been against the strongest of opponents. Here's me looking into my crystal ball. Could be totally wrong. Have been before, will be again. But this is the crystal ball. I think if Hearts can wrap up European football and third spot, knowing now what we know with regards to the draw for the semi-finals, if Hearts can wrap up third spot around about the split, so say there's five games to go. Hearts have done it at the split or just after with four games to go. I think you'll see Craig Gordon playing in either all or the majority of those games. And I think you might see one or two other tweaks with regards to youngsters, but we can discuss that later. But that is what I think will happen. If we know that there's no more we can do, it's about the third spot. You don't particularly want to go into a cup final if Hearts have got there with your goalkeeper playing once a month. You want to give them reps. But even if Hearts are out of the cup at that stage, I think if we've clinched third, that would be an opportunity to play Craig Gordon in every game to give him the best possible opportunity, not just of being in the squad. I think we're past that now. I don't see any way how Liam Kelly gets in the squad. I can understand why they've maybe done four. You want to kind of let him down a little bit gently. You might want to give him some game time and whatever and see how he goes. But ultimately, I think it's Xander Clark and Craig Gordon. But even although Xander's the number one pick right now at Hearts, I think for Scotland, Craig Gordon would be above Xander in the pecking order. And I think that would be especially if the case was so, if Craig played between now and the end of the season, after the split, if Hearts have secured third spot.
Are you suggesting Craig Gordon's nailed on for semi-final, and if we reach the final, regardless of 100%. What's going on in the league?
100%.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yeah. Not even 99.9.
Okay.
Craig Gordon, the only thing that will stop him from playing is injury or suspension, but he ain't going to play in the league. I think it's pretty clear now. Craig Gordon, ultimately, I mean, as much as we would have liked him to play in the league, the time to do that was after the Rangers 5-0. He didn't. So Xander Clark's the league goalkeeper. Unless there's a period of where it goes to shit and two or three games and there's regular mistakes. And I hope that isn't the case, because that would mean Hearts might be not pegged back for third, but it wouldn't be great. So if Xander's going to be the league goalkeeper, 100% Craig Gordon is the cup goalkeeper, certainly for the semis. And if we get through, injury and suspension permitting, he'll be the cup final goalkeeper as well.
Okay.
You disagree?
I don't disagree. It was more a question. I would be lying if I said I knew that was. I just wondered. I know we've spoken about, you know, that's the understanding. Craig's cup goalkeeper, Sanders playing in the league. I just wondered if that would categorically stay the same if we get to, you know, we get to the semis, we get to the final. I'm not saying it shouldn't. I just wondered. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, I'm not as confident as Mark is that he'll get a run of games in the league. I think if there's a cup final, then I think he may play one or two games just you know, in that sort of running. But I don't think he'll get much else than that, unless, like Mark's already mentioned, there's maybe a sort of significant drop in form for Xander Clark between now and then.
Didn't say I was confident, Scott, that he'll play a lot of league games. I'm 100% convinced that he plays the semi-final and then plays the final if he's available for selection. As far as the other thing is concerned, he can do what he likes. Craig wants to play as much as he can. And Stevie Clark, right now, who do I think Stevie Clark's first choice goalkeeper is? It's probably Angus Gunn. I looked at all the games he's played for Norwich, and it's circumstances, isn't it? You get a chance because of injury or suspension. If you take the chance, especially in international football, it's a loyalty aspect. Do I think Angus Gunn's a better goalkeeper than Craig Gordon? No, but I think Craig Gordon's a better goalkeeper than Xander Clark, but he's the backup right now. It's about circumstances as well as ability.
Yeah, I think you're right to talk about sort of Clark's loyalty, and I think that's why Craig Gordon will probably go to Germany as number two. I think there will be an element of trust there and also loyalty from previous matches. I think because Gunn has been the number one for this campaign, again, I think there'll be loyalty shown to him there. Now, we've seen that doesn't always work out. You know, we reference back to the previous European Championships where David Marshall was preferred to Craig Gordon purely based on loyalty rather than ability, and that didn't work out. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, whether this is a positive or a negative for Steve Clark come the end of the summer. But I definitely think he'll be in that sort of on that plane going over to Germany. Especially if he can keep himself fit. And, you know, he looked as sharp as ever last night.
For Lawrence Shankland, do we think we'll see him starting in these upcoming friendlies or one of? Steve Clark's watched him last two games. Maybe the Morton game wasn't the best match to showcase him. It wasn't maybe the type of game. But Celtic performed well, got a goal, showed what he can do.
I think the Northern Ireland match, I think that's probably the one. I wouldn't be surprised to see him starting that one. I think against the Netherlands, again, I think Clark will want to probably go with as strong a team as he can. And I do think, regardless of, you know, Shankland's form and his goal-scoring prowess, I still think Adams and Dykes will be the preferred players when it comes to the championships, based on just different skill sets and how they blend in with other players within the squad. But yeah, I can see him getting a start against Northern Ireland, and that's a good opportunity for him if that comes.
I'd prefer him to start against Northern Ireland than against the Netherlands. I think the Netherlands is more of a type of Germany game, and I don't know who's going to start against Germany, but I think it's between Lyndon Dykes and Shea Adams. And I think I mentioned that a couple of weeks ago before. For me, Lawrence Shankland is his jack-in-the-box. It's his potential get-out-of-jail-free card. It's his go-and-win-us-the-game card. And I think that's maybe what Lawrence Shankland's position will be. Now, we've seen before in tournament play, someone comes off the bench, plays really well, or gets a goal, maybe gets a start in the second game. That could happen. But right now, I'd be very surprised if... I mean, there's no doubt that Lawrence Shankland goes, right? So we know he's part of the squad, unless, God forbid, he gets hurt or anything like that. It's not a case of, oh, will he make the plane? He's on the plane unless something stupid happens. Do we start him? I think he's more dangerous off the bench for Scotland than Lyndon Dykes is. So, certainly for the first game, and I don't know what team Germany will put out, there's a long way to go before that, I would probably start Shea Adams, and then I would bring on Lawrence Shankland.
Okay, we'll see. I don't want a big international debate. This isn't...
No, no.
This isn't scarves around the... I don't know, kilt. We'll get back on with the podcast and get focused back on club football. You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, sponsored by Forrest Hepburn and McDonald Signs, who have been offering creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. Greenock Morton against Heart of Midlothian in the Scottish Cup. The wonderful Monday evening slot that we were so kindly given for the last of the quarter-final ties in this year's competition. Hearts looking to go all the way to the final for a fourth time in six seasons, while Morton haven't actually progressed past the quarter-final stage since 1981, although that year was also the last time they defeated Hearts in the Scottish Cup, so they would have been hoping that was a little bit of an omen for them. As I mentioned, a first competitive match between the sides in front of supporters since 1988. Looking at the Hearts team, missing Callum Neuwenhoff, who picked up a hamstring injury in the game against Celtic. Yutaro Oda also out, as well as Frankie Kent, and also sidelined Craig Halkett, Barry Mackay and Liam Boyce. Three changes for Stephen Naismith from the side that won 2-0 against the champions. Clark, Neuwenhoff and Cochrane dropping out. Incoming, the returning Craig Gordon for his 280th Hearts appearance. Cammy Devlin and Kenneth Vargas. Hearts going with a 4-2-3-1 shape, at least on paper anyway, from the start. Gordon and goals, Lembikisa right, Kingsley left, Sibbick and Rolls in the centre. Benny Beringame and Cammy Devlin sitting, Grant a little bit further ahead, Vargas and Forrest supporting Shanklin, maybe looking more like a 4-3-3 at times. So, almost 3,500 Hearts fans there, most of them crammed into the wee Dublin end. My mate John, who I mentioned earlier, he described it as the best ground in Scotland in his eyes. And as I mentioned at the start of the show, it was like being alive in the 70s, he said. Scott, you were there. Was it like being alive in the 1970s?
I was going to say, some of the language that I heard was pretty similar. Yeah, you did feel like you were in a bit of a time warp at times, and I suppose Greenock's got that going for it. But yeah, I mean, away from that, it's a great old-fashioned ground. You know, I've said this before to you guys, just before we went on air tonight, that sometimes when you're in the sort of open standing, sometimes the atmosphere doesn't quite register the same way it does in the old stands. If you think back to the old sort of main stand at Tynecastle, you know, the atmosphere was always sort of kept in within that stand. Always feel like open air sort of standing. It's a little bit different. But I have to say, kudos to the Morton fans. Like, they were at it for the start. Like, they were well behind the team, even during the first half when, you know, Hearts were probably dominating possession for large spells. I felt that Morton were definitely trying to, you know, give them as much of a sort of, you know, boost of energy as they possibly could, given the lack of sort of subs and legs they had on the bench. So, yeah, definitely kudos to them. Good to see a ground like that still sort of thriving. I think the general manager came out since the game and he's talked about, obviously, the need now to try and incentivise keeping a percentage of those fans coming back on a week-to-week basis and not just turning up for a big tie that sort of comes every few years. So that's going to be a challenge for them, but they're still in a good position in the league, and who knows, maybe they'll keep a playoff spot and maybe cause a bit of trouble in there.
Yes, Capello, the giant terracing. I think it kind of reminds me when I see it, especially Hearts playing there, of dusting off the old VHS I had when I was younger, Back from the Brink. And it was,
yes,
obviously Hearts kind of resurgence in the 80s after the dismal 70s. And it was one of the only times I'd seen Capello, because obviously they've not been around the top flight and they've not played Hearts for many years. Mark, you were watching from, I was watching from afar, but only about 20 miles. You were watching from a little bit further away. I do still love these games. Whether you're obviously being there is fantastic for the fans. You know, a good old fashioned ground seems to generate a good atmosphere. But just watching as well, isn't it? It makes it feel a bit more like a cup tie, doesn't it? It's got a lot more soul and character than some of the sort of flat pack stadiums that pop up these days.
Definitely, and I know you were solo doing commentary. That's one of the hardest things to do for a commentator, especially in a game like this. And here's the reason why: when you watch highlights from Tynecastle, the Wheatfield stand is where the camera is. So it's way up the back, row 30 or 28 or whatever it is. So you get that perfect view. Right now, it's Barcelona-Napoli in the Champions League, up the back in Montjuic and everything like that. So you get this more of a bird's eye view. I struggled at times watching the pictures, more so in the first half when Hearts were attacking the goal away to the left end. Just because it is what it is, and the camera's as high up as it can go, but it's a proper old school feel. And I'm all for that. It's like the beach end at Pittodrie as it used to be without a roof, with the kind of benches, but no one actually sits on them. You're standing for most of the game. And I would be all for a 16 or an 18 team league. And I know it probably won't happen because they need to find a way of getting their four old firm games for the TV, which is a nonsense. But still, there's not much between top end of Championship and bottom end of the Premiership. And I would love... It's a trip out as well. I'm sure, Scott, if it wasn't a Monday night, you probably would have made more of that if it was a Saturday or a Sunday. When you get to the quarterfinals of the Cup, you know you've got it's everything but a 3 p.m. on Saturday because they're all going to be televised and they've still got those draconian rules about not having any live games on TV between 2:45 and 5:15 on a Saturday afternoon. But the only downside was a Monday night. But I tell you what, I thought there'd be more gaps in the Hearts end. I hardly saw any. I think we sold all our tickets, and that's tantamount to the support that that Hearts are getting right now. I mean, that is not an easy place to get to at any stage, never mind during rush hour. So to the boys and girls that went, they made a brilliant noise, and as did the Morton fans, and it was just a really good spectacle.
It certainly was. Yeah, I think when you're watching the studio, the thing that popped up for me, which always frustrates me, is when the whoever's producing on the likes of the BBC, there's a substitution made and they don't go to, you don't see who goes off for some of them. You see someone coming on, but the edit doesn't cut to that. So obviously the BBC will have graphics that says who comes on and off. I don't have that.
Yeah.
So it's like Alex Cochrane's come on for Hearts. And I'll just continue commentating right now because I have no idea who came off. So I'll.
That's why you got a laptop beside you or something.
I'm refreshing Twitter. I was like, come on, Hearts, update. Who's gone off?
You have to. Because we can see what you can see at home. If you're watching, I've probably done over 1,000 commentaries since I moved to ESPN. And 95% of them have been what we call off tube. So you learn. You learn not to guess. If you don't know the goal scorer, you keep it generic. If you're not sure if the linesman's got his flag up, or the assistant referee's got his flag up, you find a way to keep talking until you know. So how did you find the angle as well, especially in that first half? Because sometimes shots kind of went closer than they actually were, or you thought they were close and they were going miles away. That must have been pretty tricky as well, because it was hard to follow on TV.
Yeah, it wasn't easiest. It had to kind of, like you say, keep things minimalist. I think it's kind of tougher when you're doing it because there is an audio only crowd as well. I think that's tougher because you're needing to describe more and more. TV crowd doesn't matter so much because if they're seeing it anyway, so you can be minimalist. But yeah, the Morton shirts don't help either. Kind of black numbers on blue hooped shirts. Not quite as bad as St. Mirren when they have black and white and then they have black numbers on them or red numbers on them, but it's up there. Anyway, we got on with it. As we do. And it was a game that we kind of expected. We all spoke about this. And none of us were really expecting a sort of free-flowing Hearts performance where they were able to play a nice passing game and break Morton down. We weren't expecting it to be a thoroughly entertaining game in that respect. We knew it would be a bit of a battle the way Morton would play with the pitch. And it turned out that way. First half, though, Hearts had a fair bit of control, though, I felt. At halftime, we were level, Scott, but not really trouble. Dominating possession, hadn't really given Morton any proper chances. I felt kind of comfortable at that stage. I felt like at halftime, this is okay. You know, we can up the ante a little bit. Morton will tire. They've not got much on the bench. We will find a way through.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment of the first half. And even although I'd predicted a 3-0 win for Hearts, I kind of felt that the way the first half went was pretty much what I was expecting. And there was that kind of expectance of Motherwell not having many options on the bench, their legs starting to tire because they were having to sort of chase the ball, that we would eventually sort of tire them down, maybe get a goal early on in the second half and then sort of take the game from there.
That's maybe Motherwell would have to beat Morton.
Yeah. That didn't quite. What did I say?
You said Motherwell.
Did I? Oh, yeah. Jesus Christ.
They got put out.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't quite transpire that way. So, you know, we had to sort of wait a little bit longer for that sort of defining goal on the 85th minute for Vargas. But yeah, for me, first half went as we'd probably expected. Morton went with the five at the back, given their lack of options up top. And they, I think like a lot of teams this season, they were quite comfortable pushing us out wide and then just dealing with the sort of cross balls, given who they had playing in their back five. We, unfortunately, and again, this is something we've talked about ad nauseum at times this season, we really do struggle to move the ball quickly enough. And again, Stephen Naismith seems to be aware of it, but I think there's a personnel problem at the club that we just don't have the tools to do what he or the fans are wanting to see just now. So I think that's something that's going to require a little bit of surgery in the summer, whether that's implementing some of the younger players from the B team or looking out with the squad and, you know, bringing in a couple of external sort of choices. But that's something we're going to have to address, because again, there was times where we weren't really stepping up for the back. So Sibic and Rolls, after being quite aggressive on the ball against Celtic, I felt were a little bit tentative again. I felt that Kingsley was trying to make things happen. When the ball was going out wide, I felt that sort of Lembekisa and Forrest in particular were again trying to make things happen. But there really was that lack of drive coming through the centre of the midfield. And that's something we're going to have to probably try and address over the next few months.
Yeah, Mark, looking at the kind of dynamic in the team, obviously we had the back four again. I think I certainly felt like maybe a three would have made sense in this one. Obviously Cochrane dropped out. You could have had Cochrane in there and played Lembekisa or Atkinson on the right and had Sibic, Rolls and Kingsley along the back three. But we did go with the four though, and Morton played it pretty well though, although I wasn't too concerned about them, certainly in the first half. You know, the backline weren't really doing an awful lot with the ball, and the problem with Beningame and Devlin in there, they weren't offering too much either. And I think it was telling. I think in the first half I said I barely felt like I was ever saying Vargas or Shanklin's name. It was just never really getting to them. Maybe Forrest, I thought, was kind of the brighter spark out of them, but there was a problem from us going, you know, transitioning from defence into midfield, wasn't there really? There just wasn't much going on in that area.
Yeah, initially I thought three might be not our only option, because we've always got options, but our safest option, because think of the options if it was a four at the back. Okay, the one that played, Rolls and Sibic, or Kingsley and Sibic, or Rolls and Kingsley. Now, it's not ideal, and we've all had the gone around that text chain that we had on WhatsApp about two left-footed centre-backs, a right-footer playing at left-back, vice versa. So we ended up with Rolls against Sibic, and I think he's looked to that and known fine well that it was going to be Muirhead in attack, and even he would be helping out, and you're basically going to have three centre-backs then marking nobody, maybe marking one in Robbie Muirhead, but that's about it. The problem you then have if you've got the three centre-backs is that they're not the greatest with the ball at their feet. So by taking away one of the centre-backs and going with a back four, you can then introduce a midfielder who's better with the ball at his feet and can create a lot. I thought we just had a lot of possession for possession's sake for large chunks of the game. But I'm gonna preface that by saying I have no cares whatsoever how we played last night. I think this is a game that it was so much about the result. And I'm glad that you can speak to Scott and whatever about where we went wrong or what we did right with regards to that. For me, given what was at stake and making sure that if Hearts don't win the Scottish Cup, then Celtic or Rangers do, to ensure that third place gets at least 5 million, could be 10 games or a minimum of 10 games it would be in the Europa League and a minimum of 8 games in the Conference League. There's so much at stake. So I would much rather we played the way we played and got the result than played well, somehow lost. Morton then drew Aberdeen. Aberdeen fluked their way into the cup final by way of a lucky draw, and then have one of those days against Rangers that they've had twice this season, and find a way of taking the riches away from us again. So Scotty's your guy for all the intricacies, but I know we've gone to a four. What I would say is it wouldn't surprise me if Dougie Emery said to Kirk Broadfoot, because Lawrence Shanklin made reference to this after the game, he said, we were playing judo for 90 minutes. Wouldn't it surprise me if Dougie Emery said to Kirk Broadfoot, look, he's their best player. We can do without you. But if you can keep him quiet, then you're worth playing. And I know Broadfoot got booked in the second half, but overall, I think he did a reasonable job against Shanklin. So, yeah.
Didn't resort to yanking his hair either.
No. Or boiling eggs or doing all sorts, poaching and microwaves and everything. But yeah, good on him. It wasn't Shanklin's best game, but we had someone else that stepped up. But as far as a back four is concerned, Rolls and Sibic, I wouldn't be starting the semi-final with that pair.
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously we caveat everything we're talking about here by the fact this is a cup game. The only thing that matters ultimately in a cup game is getting through. And over the period of the game, I thought even if you do want to talk about the balance of play, I think Hearts were still the better side. They had the better chances, and I think they deserve to go through despite what a certain Dougie Emery might say. But that doesn't matter whether you deserve to or not. If you get through, that's the big thing. But we'll still talk about a few little things here. Why not? Big save from Craig Gordon from Lewis Strapp in the second half. It's good to see him get a clean sheet again, his first clean sheet this season, albeit only his third appearance of the campaign. Kenneth Vargas should have scored when he was set up by Shankland, hitting the bar. Aidan Denham, who came off the bench, also should have scored one-on-one. But I think, Scott, what you've got to say is that this easily could have been a game that got away from Hearts, a game that they could have buckled under the pressure when, not an awful lot of pressure, but just when things got a bit nervy, when Morton actually threatened and they came into the game and you're sitting with the game on a knife edge at 0-0, it doesn't matter who you're playing or how good one team's been playing or poor the other team's been playing. It takes one moment of magic, one error, and you're out the cup. But I thought we still kept the head, and I think that says a lot about the team, and we got the goal that I felt overall we deserved. And you've got to give credit to a few players in the build-up to that. Benny Beningame, Lawrence Shanklin, and then the man who finished it, Kenneth Vargas.
Yeah, definitely. And I think last night you could probably bunch that in with the recent Derby performance or the performance at the Spartans. I think there have been occasions this season where either the team have had to be quite patient. They've maybe had large spells of the game. You think back to that Livingston match back at Tynecastle, back around sort of the October-November time when our run started. There's been those matches where the team have really had to be patient. They had to be patient against Celtic when they went down to 10 men. And I think that has been one of the more pleasing aspects of the team this season. There's a maturity about how the team go about their business, and they are very well coached on and off the ball. Again, it just goes back to those small things that they just need to figure out moving into next season around sort of moving the ball and sort of maybe having a few more variations and styles of play going forward. But definitely, as Mark said, you know, when it comes to cup football, you know, if your name's on the trophy at the end of the season, all those sort of context and bits and pieces about how we played in each game doesn't get added on there. You know, that doesn't get chiseled into that trophy. So ultimately, it's all about winning. And again, I think he's right to highlight that in terms of how we approached the game, we weren't snatching at things towards the end of the game. Yeah, we should have taken our earlier chances with Benny and sort of Vargas and maybe Denham as well. But I never saw the team look flustered by missing those chances. They just sort of kept doing what they were being asked to do, and eventually they got the just rewards for it. And I think these are right to highlight that we were the better team. Morton had a good spell in the second half, and I can understand why Dougie Emery is full of praise for his players, and I think he should be. I think they gave everything they could, but yeah, I still felt that we were reasonably in control, and it was all going to, you know, come down to who was going to get the first goal, given how Morton had set up, and thankfully it was us.
Some of the comments afterwards from Dougie Emery, and like, I can understand, you're passionate, you see it through the eyes of your own team, but to suggest that Hearts were fortunate that they were at Hampden, because it should have been Motherwell, he needs to stop drinking the clown juice. I mean, come on now. You've just been selective in that chance for Vargas that he didn't take and he should have scored. And the other chances, you can't just think all the chances that they had, which were maybe two or three, and then forget all about the other chances. And the other thing is as well, he brought on Waters with 87 minutes to go. They were going backwards. They made Benny Beningame look like Ben Johnson when he was coming forward. It was like they were running in treacle. So, yeah, they didn't have a strong bench. They only had four kind of youngish players, but not overly experienced, plus plus a goalkeeper. But he elected only to bring one of them on after 87 minutes. So clearly they weren't as good as the players that they would have been replacing. But those players were absolutely shattered. It was the type of game that if it had have gone to extra time, you would probably see Hearts scoring two or three goals had it gone to extra time, because they were out on their feet. And any time that ball got forward, you thought Hearts have got a chance. By the way, a couple of the chances came from the goalkeeper. I think there was one throw out to Natty Atkinson, which was excellent, and then another throw out down the left hand side, which resulted in a Hearts corner. So, yeah, you try and stretch the field. And Stephen Naismith's comments afterwards, I thought were spot on. And it's easy for us to kind of get involved in the minutiae and all the intricacies of everything that's gone on before and the chances. Bigger picture, you play the long game. You know fine well that Morton are nowhere near as fit as his Hearts team. So you try and get ahead, and if you're not, you know that you're going to end strongly because you've got a strong bench if you need it, or the players you've got are fitter than their opponents. So was I ever worried? I was nervous a couple of times when they came forward. I don't think I was ever worried because I felt as long as there was plenty of time left, if they scored, that we would get the equaliser if we had gone behind, because we had plenty fitter players out there. I don't think it was a great performance, but look, we got the job done, and no one will be talking about Morton against Hearts from a Hearts perspective at the end of the season. From a Morton perspective, they will, but leave them to it.
Yeah, it'll be in our highlights reel for the cup win.
Well, a couple of, yes, video. Couple of, but that's the only highlights.
Indeed. So, Kenneth Vargas, seventh of the season, now scored in each round that he's played in. Spartans, Airdrieonians, and now against Morton to send Hearts through to the Scottish Cup semi-final.
And Hearts have won it back. Benny Beningame driving out. Heavy touch, but he's still going. Benny Beningame out to Shankland. Edge of the box, Shankland into the area, Vargas on the angle! Kenneth Vargas drills it home in front of the Jubilant Jambos in the wee Dublin end! Shankland couldn't get a hold of it, but it fell to Vargas! He scored in the fourth round, he scored in the fifth round! And he's now scored in the quarter-final here. And what a vital goal it could be for the Costa Rican. Finally, the deadlock is broken. Shankland will get the assist here. Vargas gets the goal. Morton 0, Hearts 1.
Forrest Hepburn and MacDonald have been making creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. For more, visit fhmcdesigns.co.uk.
Okay, let's get some reaction to both the quarterfinal and the draw that was made immediately afterwards, which of course paired Hearts with Rangers in the last four. Jordan says, not that we learned it, but we saw that Gordon is by far our best keeper. If Clark's in, we are out with a cup. Nasey hasn't got much wrong, but he's got that wrong by sticking with Clark. Rangers is a free hit. We're expected to lose, but we have to beat them sometime. I think Jordan's maybe a little harsh on that one. I mean, I think Gordon played well, made a good save, but we don't know. Clark may well have also saved it. I'm in the middle on that one still. I think Gordon's a better keeper, but I think there's plenty of arguments for Clark as well at this stage.
As far as the email's concerned, I'm the self-confessed president of the Craig Gordon fan club, and even that's harsh, that comment about Xander Clark. It's subjective. It is what it is. We've got two bloody good goalkeepers. I would love to see Craig Gordon be the number one goalkeeper, the first choice right now, but how do you... Bear in mind, we signed him on a three-year deal, Xander Clark. Right, and I'm not backtracking on everything I've said. I want Craig to play. But I think you've got to think bigger picture here. And I disagree with those guys. I mean, if it's the wrong decision. Look, Craig will play against Rangers in the semi-final. But to say that about Xander, no. No, not for me.
Alexander Scott says, Vargas looking a real prospect, albeit he's frustrating and enjoyable to watch in equal measure. On 7 goals for the season, hopefully he gets to 10+. He is the Ginelli replacement. That's strong words there from Alexander. What do you reckon, Scott? How are you? I probably summed Vargas up pretty well just now that game, didn't he? Because he missed a sitter that he should have converted, but then took his goal very well.
Yeah, I mean, if he's comparing him to Ginelli because neither of them can play wide right, then yeah, I suppose he's got a point. Look, no, all joking aside, I think he took his goal really well. And you know what? I think if you look at some more disappointing aspects of his game, which has been he tends to sometimes snatch at opportunities given his age. I think in some of those instances, he's actually created space and worked those opportunities for himself as well, especially in the Hibs game. You know, some of the pressure that he put on Abita and nicking the ball away from him and his aggressive sort of running style. So even in those instances where he's maybe not been great in front of goal, he's actually fashioned chances for himself. And I think he's far and away the second option just now up top for us. There's no one really close to him, given that Boyce is injured and Tago has, you know, well-documented struggled on and off the pitch to kind of settle in at the club just now. So I think, you know, the goals that he's brought since kind of November, December time have been a welcome addition to the club. And like they're saying, you know, if he hits 10 goals, if he can get another 3 or 4 goals between now and the end of the season, it's likely that, you know, we're finishing third and potentially, you know, in a cup final as well.
Mike Monteith says, for long spells, our centre-backs had very few options and ended up just going long into Shankland or into channels. It improved when we made the changes and the fullbacks became more inverted, but are we short of a ball player in central midfield? We missed Callum Newton, I think, didn't we?
We did. Come to me if you want with this, but I'm going to immediately say to Scott, you can have this one. Not just for a ball-playing player in midfield, but if right now, Scotty, you had to pick what you would consider is the best Hearts team available for the first game of next season, how many blanks would you have in that midfield area, along with which current players? Who do you think, maybe not surplus to requirement, but if we want to be really serious about challenging for whatever next season, who would be the one or ones that you would keep in there, and who would be squads or not part of the plans?
I think there's probably about 3 gaps in that strongest 11 just 3. Now.
Okay, where?
That's going with a sort of 3-4-3 formation. Okay. I would say there's probably a good 3 gaps in there just now.
Right wing back would be one then, yes?
Yes, that's definitely top of the agenda. I think wide position, and I think, you know, I've just talked about Vargas in terms of his space in the team. I do think that with Shankland dropping, you can play a sort of 3-4-3 and have sort of Vargas playing as one of the 2 advanced forwards. So I think there's a gap there for someone else. And that sounds really harsh on Alan Forrest, who's done so much for us this season. But sometimes you've got to think about long term, and do Hearts have the budget to bring in someone who's maybe got a little bit more intelligence in the box and so he can lift his head up and use the ball a little bit better, and I think we do. That's not to say Alan Forrest doesn't have something to contribute to the squad. He certainly does, and I'm glad that he signed that contract extension, but I do think that's a spot that we could fill with our budget over the summer. And I think the other one is in centre midfield.
Gotta be. Is this your ball winner? Or your ball playing midfielder?
It's not so much a ball player. I'd just like to see somebody that can drive with the ball forward. I think, to be fair, Benny's good at intercepting the game, and I think that Devlin and to a degree, Neuenhoff and Denham are quite good at sort of pressing the game higher up the park in that as well. And Neuenhoff's obviously got a bit of control to his possession as well that maybe Cammy and Aidan Denham don't. But I still think there's something missing in that midfield, and not in every fixture. I think that's been discussed before. We've talked about how we've performed against Celtic and how it's not as big a miss when we've maybe only got 30-35% possession in a game and we're maybe chasing the game. Or take the derby at Easter Road in December. I think Alex Cochrane does a really good job in centre midfield because it's all about winning second balls and being athletic, and I think Alex Cochrane gives you that. I think last night showcases what Alex Cochrane can't really bring to your midfield when you're really needing an element of control and drive from the midfield. I don't think that's really any sort of wheelhouse. So, yeah, that would be the third position I'd like to see us try. It's hard because I think, to a degree, those types of midfielders are becoming a little bit extinct. You know, everyone's now either a 6 or a 10. Yeah, and if you are really good as a proper sort of ball carrying eight, you're probably going to need to pay through the nose to get that. So, yeah, they would be the three I'd be looking at just now. And again, I think Benny, Devlin, Neuenhoff, they all have their merits and they all can add something to the squad. But I do think we're still missing a little bit of balance in there.
Sam Moffat says, one thing we learned is how important the Hoff is just now. Thought we missed him last night. Hopefully by the time the semi-final comes around, the majority of our injured players will be back. And he also points out right back as a weakness. And Sam says that neither option fills him with confidence.
What's happened to the right back area just now, Laurie? Goodness me, Lembakisa and Natty Atkinson. You could put the pair of them together and I'm not sure you'd get a player that you'd want to start.
Lembakisa's what, nine wins out of nine appearances for Hearts? Yeah, it wasn't. He was not great. Put it that way.
I gave him options as he got in front of him. Like this is one of the issues that we're having just now. don't get me wrong. Right back, we do need to look at getting a permanent fix in there over the summer. But to give Lembakisa his due last night, there isn't a lot of movement in front of him, especially in that central area. You know, I thought George Grant was really poor last night. I didn't think he didn't want to be involved. I think he took a couple of knocks in the first half and I just don't think he fancied it. Cammy, again, was good at winning back possession, but I don't think he's going to prove to be the midfield option that I think Stephen Naismith is looking for, and I do think that Neuenhoff will be the preferred option for Naismith. And again, Benny's good at recycling the ball. And if you're a goal up and you need Benny to do that, then that's great. But again, I didn't see Benny showing for the ball much in the first half either. So I do have a degree of sympathy for Lembakisa, even although I agree that he's probably not the long-term option for us either.
Okay, let's see what else we've got. Quickly fire through some more of these. Graham says, we learned that the Morton boy can get a throw into the box from the halfway.
I just wish he'd come on as a sub, because you would have had to have said,
oh yeah, strap on, of course.
Childish.
Graham says, not confident given our form against them. This is talking about Rangers in terms of the draw, but it has to change at some point. Could have Halkett, Boyce and Mackay back by then. We need to be on it from the start and we need them to have an off day. We'd rather have had Aberdeen. We'd rather Aberdeen, but we have to beat Rangers at some point. We'll mention that. So we'll obviously spoken about the draw within those messages that we've got, but probably the least fancied draw, I would say, for us out of the three options, getting Rangers, who Hearts have an absolutely abysmal record against at Hampden Park. Couldn't really be any worse. 19 games against them, yet to beat them at the National Stadium, having already played there in the semi-final of the League Cup earlier this season. But one thing, Mark, that I think you've possibly mentioned on social media already, Rangers play Benfica later in this week. They are level from the first leg, so in with a chance of qualifying. If they do qualify, they will have a Europa League quarterfinal second leg on the Thursday before that semi-final, which will no doubt be on the Sunday. That could be against the likes of Liverpool, Roma, Marseille, Milan, Leverkusen. Now I know people are saying, what happened in the Scottish Cup final when they were meant to be knackered after playing Frankfurt? I know. It doesn't mean that it will definitely work in our favour, but it's a potential factor, isn't it?
It is. I think it's more a mentality thing rather than a fitness thing. I didn't think that we looked like we could believe, or we had belief that we were going to win that, and we allowed Rangers to do what they did to us. That was, if ever there was a game, get in your face, snap about their heels, just press them and whatever, it was that one. But I was messaging with Luke Shanley last night about the Hearts record with Rangers in Glasgow. You spoke about 19-0 for Rangers at Hampden. Twice Hearts have beaten Rangers in Glasgow in knockout competitions. One, of course, was the 1998 Scottish Cup final, and the other was in 1894. So it's happened twice, but it's rare. I also put out about a 50-50 split, because I think that's fair for a Scottish Cup semi-final, to which one of the responses was that, hey, they only took 600 to Tynecastle. So I worked that out and I thought, right, that's 3%. So 3% of the Hampden capacity, yeah, you're not talking that many. So, yeah, I mean, look, we have a bit of a laugh about that. But Hearts were very angry when they requested a 50-50 split for the League Cup semi-final. Now, the difference here is that was decided by the SPFL, the league. This is decided by the Scottish FA, the Cup. So I'm intrigued to see what the outcome is, but there'll not be an announcement until Friday at the earliest as to which game is going to take place when. Because if Rangers get through against Benfica, then that semi-final, our semi-final, has to be Sunday.
And Aberdeen, I think it'll be Sunday, to be fair. Saturday. I think it will be.
You could announce it now and just basically have it on Sunday, regardless. Doesn't have to rely on that. But I don't know. I mean, you've got to speak with cops and everything like that about that. But why don't we toss a coin, see which end the Hearts supporters get?
I mean, the
all that nonsense.
Yeah, it's in any, it is other, what it is. That's in any other country, it would just seem, I think it would be ludicrous to feel that certain teams are guaranteed a certain end of a ground and that a neutral venue would not automatically be split between the sides. The ends, I can't be bothered. I mean, I can't be bothered going to either of these things, but especially the ends, you know, the ends of the ground, whatever. But the 50-50 split thing, I mean, it should just be, a team should have the opportunity to. It's not to say that you have to give them half the tickets and if they don't sell them, it sits empty. And some teams might say, actually, no, we won't take 22,000 or 20, whatever the split is after they've given all the corporate ones away. But you know, to me, it's a nonsense that it's even a question. If a team wants half the tickets and they want the opportunity to sell them, you can structure in a way that you sell it by section, can't you, Scott? It's not difficult. And if Hearts asked for 24,000 tickets and they sold 22, you would just have to make sure that you've given that, you've sectioned it out, don't you?
Yeah, so
it's not rocket science, is it?
No, it just requires the adults to sit around the table at the start of a season and just say, right, this is the hard and fast rule, and understand that if Rangers or Celtic drew, let's say, St Johnstone or Inverness in a semi-final, that they are going to want to maximise the revenue as much as possible. So they will probably say, prior to the tickets going out, by the way, we don't need 50%, we'll be happy with 10,000 tickets or 8,000 tickets. I don't know why this always has to happen every season. Just get everyone round the table at the start of your season, draw up a contract and say it's 50-50 split at the start, and then it's up to those clubs to then sort of, you know, decide if they feel that they're not going to be able to meet that demand, you know, and that they'll be happy to hand back tickets, you know, right at the start or after a week's period of seeing how their ticket sales go. But for some reason, certain individuals who earn upwards of £300,000 or £400,000 a year don't seem to want to be able to take ownership of this situation and would rather the clubs just immerse themselves in this sort of silly petty tribalism for a few weeks leading up to the semi-final and the final, which can sometimes take a little bit of you know, the spotlight away from what should be a, you know, a big event for the Scottish football calendar.
You've got to remember as well with the League Cup semi-final, just traditionally, the Scottish Cup, I mean, I would love to have won the League Cup before now, since 1962-63 season, but Hearts were given 18,000. They wanted a 50-50 split. And you know what? Maybe it strengthens our case now to have one, because if we'd got a 50-50 split then, so the way it worked, and having read the articles on Hearts Standard and various other, and the Hearts website as well, Hearts got 18,000 and it would have gone up to 20,000 if required. That was the deal. But they were given 13,000 to begin with. That's how they kind of structured it. 13,000 and then more. That's the way it worked. I just hate it when Doncaster's like, I just represent the clubs. Yeah, it's so frustrating. We have same happens next year if exactly the same thing happens again. Quiz question for you both. When was the last time the Old Firm were in separate semis in the Scottish Cup?
Don't know off the top of my head.
Scotty?
I think you're probably going back to about 2010, I think.
2002. 22 years since then, they've either met in the semis or one or both haven't made it that far. And just going back to that message I had with Luke, he's like, yeah, Hibs have won our last four against Rangers at Hampden Park. 91, 04, 16 and 21. Yeah, but they're out. We're not.
Yes. The other thing I noticed when I was doing a bit of research earlier, that the last time the Scottish Cup winner put out both Rangers and Celtic on the way to winning the cup was Aberdeen in 1983.
Wow.
And they, in the Scottish Cup, they defeated Celtic in the semi-final and Rangers in the final.
We do it in 56? Yes. Did we play Rangers in the quarter-final at Tynecastle?
We did it in 56 as well. And although I did my own research for the last time that anyone did it, Davey Allen did message earlier on and said that yes, Hearts, confirming Hearts did it in 56 and Hibs did it in 1902 as well. So there you go. We'll talk more about the Scottish Cup semi-final when we get to that point, but we'll move on for now. You're listening to Scarves Around the Funnel, sponsored by Forrest Hepburn and McDonald Signs, who have been offering creative sign and print solutions since the 1950s. So, last up, before we go, we will preview the next game for Heart of Midlothian, which is away to Ross County up in Dingwall. Heart unbeaten in 11 trips to this ground, and Ross County haven't beaten Hearts in 14 attempts overall since a 1-0 win at Tynecastle in March 2017. Just one win in 14 for County now. That was against bottom club Livy. That said, since former Hearts hero Don Cowie took over, they have drawn won one and drawn one of their two home games. This is before they take on Hibs on Wednesday, we should say. At the time of recording, that game hasn't taken place. And they were denied a win against St Mirren with a very late goal in their last home match. So Hearts buoyant after progressing through the cup, back to league duty. Scott, how do you see this one going? This is one of these weird away games where I always feel fairly optimistic / confident because we tend to do well up there.
Yeah, I think there's every right to be quite confident. I watched their game at Easter Road a couple of weeks ago, and some of the decision making with the team just now is a little bit baffling. They've decided to play this young lad that they've got on loan in goals, and although he has been, he's been okay generally as a shot stopper, he's also been culpable for a few goals, and he was culpable for the first Hibs goal, and very important first goal in that game as well. So he's dropping the ball, spilling it quite a bit. So if he continues to play that, you know, at the expense of Ross Laidlaw, then that's an issue for them. That they seem to be, obviously without Danda just now in the team, they don't seem to be playing the ball through the lines at all. They just seem to be hitting the flanks, and they've got, you know, very direct runners and Murray and Brophy that'll give the defence a hard time. We all know that Jordan White only really turns up and scores against Hearts, given his record as well. So there is some options up there for them, but although You know, the results have improved somewhat since Don Cowie's came in. Performances haven't really. I mean, against St Mirren, they got a 1-1 draw, but they only had one shot on target in that game. They didn't really have the bulk of the ball either. So I can see this game being one where they'll be quite happy to sit in and give us the ball, and they'll be hoping to maybe try and hit us on the break, like I say, with willing runners like Brophy and Murray. But, you know, if we approach this game the same way we have been away fixtures this season, I can't see why we can't come away with the 3 points.
Yeah, Hearts have won 8 of their last 9 away games. Obviously, the one defeat was that hammering at the hands of Rangers, but one defeat in 16 overall going into this game, obviously in very good form. Mark, what do you fancy? Do you think Hearts will make a few changes for this one from the cup game?
Ooh.
Obviously, apart from the goals, we know that'll change.
Yeah, yeah. Do we need to freshen things up? I don't know. I don't know what we'll do at right back. I mean, whatever we do, it is what it is.
If do we you're need freshen... looking for a right back, send us a better
song than Dexter. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the away form. Win at Celtic, win at Hibs, win at Livy, win at Spartans, win at Dundee, win at St Johnston, win at Airdrie, Rangers blip, win at Morton. I mean, that's outstanding. So I think anything less than 3 points for Hearts is a disappointment. But you get to the stage of the season now. We're at March. Okay, so Ross County have played 28. Hearts have played 29. Ross County have obviously got that game this midweek, so they might be tired. But you get extra effort from players at this stage of the season just because they know what's at stake. And so if it's Dundee against Aberdeen, it's Ross County Hibs, I think, isn't it? That game in midweek. So, again, it's very difficult to say now. They win that game and suddenly they're only potentially a point behind Aberdeen if they lose at Dundee. So they get the benefits of that. They lose that game and Aberdeen win at Dundee and suddenly it's a 5-point gap, not a 4-point gap, and it's to St Johnston, not to Aberdeen. So I'd replace George Grant. I mean, it's all injury dependent. I know Nieuwenhof's out. I know Scott Fraser was he on the bench last night? I know he wasn't 100%. Regardless, what about Denham? What about Tate? I know Pollock came on lately. I mean, is it worth playing one of those players? I mean, Tagawa. What are we doing with him? Are we going to sell him in this January? Sorry, in this transfer window before the Japanese transfer window closes, because it's open right now. Do you persevere with him? If you do, well, is this a game that you might use him? Or, as Scotty said before, Tagawa is probably a type of character who would run in behind a Celtic higher line, and Ross County aren't probably going to do that. So if not this Saturday, then when? I think you go pretty similar to what you've been playing, but I'd look for someone to replace George Grant in that midfield. And defensively, what do we do? Do we do a 4? Do we do a 3? Is it game-specific now?
I wouldn't mind going similar to what we played against Celtic, to be honest.
Celtic, okay, not more. Right.
In terms of Kingsley was in the middle of the back three with Rose left, Sibbick right, Cochrane left wing back. Right wing back, yeah, undecided. Whoever performs best in training in the build-up to it. But I wouldn't be against going with that shape. I think it gives us a bit more security. You know, for Ross County, if they get a win against Hibs, it does change it, but say they lose or draw that game, they're going to go into these home games needing to try and win games. So I don't think it's a game where they're going to necessarily sit in. So I wouldn't be against a kind of more solid 3, especially with obviously no Kent being available and using Kingsley. I thought he did well in that. He was almost a sweeper in the Celtic game. I thought he did well in that. We do tend to do well up there though. So hopefully a positive performance. Scott, what are you going for? Are you going for a confident prediction in this one?
I'm going to say 2-0 Hearts. And I think Kenneth Fargas will keep his scoring run going.
Nice. How about you, Mark?
Hearts have only failed to score once at Ross County in the league, and that was that goalless draw, I believe, in January 2020. So I think Hearts score. I think we got a couple. They might score 2-1 Hearts, Lawrence Shankland.
Okay. Nice. I'll go even more bold with this one. I'm going to say 3-0 to Hearts.
Take that.
Of course, absolutely would. And Alan Forrest to get on this score sheet, as he did last time. Hearts were up in Dingwall. Hopefully that will be the case. I'll take any of those three score lines as long as Hearts make that long journey back south with 3 points. It's not quite a ground that will take you back to the 70s, but hopefully the Hearts fans will be boogieing away to the Bee Gees and the Mallard after full time, celebrating another Hearts win on the road. Whatever happens, we will be back next week to discuss it. If you want to get in touch in the meantime, email podcast@scarvesaroundthefunnel.co.uk, or you can tweet us @aroundthefunnel. Until next time, thanks for tuning in.